got it. Here we go. Bucky's Auto Service Center. For 48 years or 13 locations, they took care of your car. What's the problem with the car? Bring it in there. Squeaky brakes. They'll fix that for you. Or maybe if your windshield wipers need to be repaired, you can do that. Bucky's Auto Service.
Does that mean you got your windshield wipers fixed?
Couldn't hear you, Tom. I was underwater. What'd you say?
Does that mean you got your windshield wipers fixed?
No. It just means I've learned to drive without them. Can't drive. I tell you, when it's most difficult and probably dangerous is at night while it's raining. But during the day, you just sort of like, you're like looking through the windshield like a fly's eye. Like if a fly were driving a car, same sort of thing. Sort of looks like.
Where's my swatter?
Here we go. A group says they have enough signatures to put the Seattle head tax, it's called a jobs tax. New guy, Jacob. We don't call it a head tax. It's a jobs tax.
No, the thing is, it's a head tax.
It's on jobs.
I know, but people know it as the head tax. Mm-hmm. So I think if you...
Mm-hmm. No, they don't. No.
And even on the jobs tax posters, they say head tax.
People wear the T-shirts, Tom. I'm talking about the soldiers, the foot soldiers on the street that are being harassed. It says job tax.
Yes,
stop
I know.
Stop job tax.
That's right, but it's the head tax. You need to know that so that that's what they're referencing.
That's a euphemism to make it seem like what it isn't. Oh, a head tax? Okay, I don't mind them taxing people's heads. It's
okay,
jobs.
So you,
it's all about jobs. Jenny Durkin, the brave mayor of Seattle, says that she won't weigh in on it. No.
I am not going to weigh in terms of right now on whether something is going to make the ballot and what happens. My job as mayor is to make sure that I work with everybody to improve what's happening in the streets of Seattle. And I'm going to focus on that every day, regardless of what happens on the ballot initiative.
Okay. Your job is to lead.
There you go.
There you go. Lead. Let's see. Denise, her last name's a mystery to me. CEO of YJamia. Seattle, of course. Yeah. She tells Cairo 7 that the jobs tax, Tom, could cause some serious problems.
It was frustrating. It's tough to do business in Seattle these days, and I think it really felt like businesses were being demonized. There's a monetary impact, but I think it's beyond that. I mean, groceries we're a tight margin business, and so it will definitely impact our prices and potentially some perks that we've offered employees, but it's more about getting the city council to spend money in a better, wiser, more accountable fashion.
Okay. It's like if you had a contract to come to your house to fix something, and they start thinking, well, it's going to be probably $20,000. You're like, okay, fine. You give them $20,000. They draw off the $20,000. Yeah, once we got into it, boy, there's a lot of I didn't realize that was old linoleum under there. That's all asbestos. That has to go. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, another 20, another 20, another 20. It's a $100,000 job. You say, well, I would have never started this if I knew it was we're going to need more than that because we got to rip the pipes out. It's the same thing. City council just keeps going and going and going and going.
Are you throwing all contractors under the bus so that basically they don't mean it?
No. I'm giving you an example.
I think you are bad-mouthing contractors.
No, because I use a specific voice.
Entrepreneurs.
I use a very specific voice of a contractor.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is I'm making it relatable to people, and that's the city council.
Just how those contractors rip you off.
Not all of them. Not all of them. There's good contractors out there.
Okay.
Cairo says stop trying to get away from the real topic, which is the people vox populi, Tom. The people of Seattle are rising up, putting their name on the referendum, and then finally it's going to get to the ballot. I think they've got enough signatures all together. Cairo 7 says they spoke to a mom in Ballard who really hates the jobs tax.
I am sick and tired of listening to city officials working in an echo chamber that has no tentacles in absolute reality of everyday city living. They are out of touch. They are inept, and they all need to be voted out.
That's what I think. I think a lot of the people, maybe a certain percentage of the people that are signing this thing, it's an F you back to the city council.
Exactly. I really think that it has little to do with the head tax. It has to do with are you happy with the state of the city right now?
Yeah.
And because we're going through very disruptive times, we've got more traffic because we have 114,000 more people, you know, here now than there were 5 years ago. Cost of living is way up. The homeless problem is up. Affordable housing is down. It's just this vote, I think, will be the culmination of them saying, hey,
enough already.
Like
In fact, the new poll even shows that. New poll shows that Seattle voters are fed up with homeless spending. They know that the amount of money being spent every single year continues to increase, and they also know the number of homeless continues to increase. I always say they're directly paralleling one another for a particular reason, which is people respond to incentives. The incentive has come here for more free crap. Seattle residents are now not only deeply dissatisfied with the city council, they've addressed homelessness. They talked to 800 likely voters, Tom, and they got an impression from them that it seems like they've had just about enough.
What's really significant about this is that a mere 18 months ago, it was there's been something like a 50% difference. A mere 18 months ago, most Seattleites thought we weren't doing enough for homeless, that we would be willing to double, you know, our efforts at the homeless. And in that 18 months, that was when Ed Murray was so cheered by this poll that's when he went out and he proposed this a combo with the King County executive, Dow Constantine, we're going to do a property tax. No, property tax is too high. Let's do a sales tax. Then when he was removed from office.
Accused pedophile.
That's right. Yeah. When he was removed, that whole plan went, you know, kaput.
Right.
And in the intervening 18 months, there's been this kind of flip for Seattleites. And I think it's all coming to a head with the head tax. I think that woman that we just heard from, I think she was cited in one of these summaries of that story, and she was saying, "Yeah, we're already overtaxed. We're taxed too much." Finally, the thing is that this tax doesn't directly impact her, but it's part of. She just says, "Oh, it's another tax," even though it's only taxing. It's taxing businesses, and it's only the top 3%. They said, "Oh, another tax is just like taxing me more." There's a kind of distinction, but I think the businesses are wisely tapping into this kind of frustration that things aren't going well in Seattle right now, and we're spending plenty, and we can barely afford to live here anymore. And the businesses will benefit from it.
I think. Wajamaya, how do you say your name?
Wajamaya.
Wajamaya. I said that they will most likely pass it on. Either they would cost the perks for the employees wouldn't have more money to spend more money within the economy, or they would just add to the increased cost of the retail goods that they would be selling. So the lady in Ballard, if she were to go to that market, she would be paying that tax.
Well, if you go to Wajamaya.
Yeah, if she's from Ballard, certainly if she wants to get in the car. Wajamaya, I know where it is, Tom. If she wants to go down to Chinatown and go to Wajamaya. She'd be paying it. Somebody pays the tax.
I know.
The whole idea of like, oh, it comes out of the corporation. Oh, really?
It does.
Oh, so the corporation. So explain to me where the corporation gets the money from. It gets the money from either the customers,
the shareholders,
or the employees.
That's right.
Right.
And the shareholders can afford it maybe more than the customers. But it's up to the individual businesses.
Oh, because shareholders are all rich and white and they're old and they don't deserve the money that they have investing in different businesses.
If you can afford to invest, you probably have more money than people that are living, paycheck to paycheck.
57% of Tom, we've been going on around this. I'm going to try to enlighten you as to who a shareholder is.
Okay.
Your wife is retired. Your wife receives pension, correct?
Yes.
And the pension comes from? The magic tree that was planted somewhere? No.
Yes,
from the private and publicly traded businesses that are doing business. Your wife is a shareholder. You are a shareholder.
We all are shareholders,
but
there are different levels of shareholding.
Oh.
And believe me, it's not going to impact me as much as it's going to impact somebody who has a lot more money invested in these companies. You guys try to cover up the people that invest try to cover up the fact that this fig leaf of, well, everybody has a little bit. If I have 5 cents and you have 5 million, it's not going to impact me like it's going to impact the guy who's invested 5 million or 50 million or 500 million.
Right.
But then, just
as long as you recognize you're a shareholder, just as long as you recognize you two are a shareholder.
Yes,
that's all.
Yeah. If you have any kind of retirement fund,
you're a shareholder.
Absolutely.
There you go. You're
but
not
the
a
idea
rich guy.
Here is that this is a tax on the corporations. It's not a tax on you. It's not a sales tax, and it's not a property tax, and there's a distinction, and that's what's being said.
Okay.
97% of the businesses in this city are not going to be affected by this head tax.
Yes. Well, listen, the beauty of it is the people are rising up, and I do believe that in November it will be on the ballot. You still are on the fence as to whether or not you'll vote no on it.
Yeah. No,
you still haven't decided.
No, I mean, I want to hear things out, but I do think that if you think that the homeless situation could use more money, I think that this might be the best route to raise it. If you don't think it does, then, you know, then there'd be no reason to do this.
Okay. Robert De Niro decides he goes out on stage and he has an award he wants to present at the Tony Awards.
To Bruce Springsteen.
To Bruce Springsteen, right. Yeah. And I assume this has been edited. Tom, you said you watched it live.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I watched the West Coast version, but I read that the East Coast version, even though it was advertised as live, they did snip it out so that this never got across on any airwaves, even the live East Coast broadcast.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I read.
Rico's Bobby.
I'm going to say one thing. F*** Trump.
Standing ovation. Standing ovation.
There was something hesitant.
It's no longer down with Trump. It's f- Trump.
By the way, as a professional beeper as you are, Andrew, you got to be impressed with that work.
I am.
I mean, somebody caught it. What you're saying, Tom, it wasn't tape delayed.
Well, that's what I read. I find it hard to, I don't know if there was some kind of 7-second delay that we're not aware of or something, but somebody.
So that particular audio was, I saw they had the F word in there. I bleeped it personally. So the one I saw was a little bit more clunky, where there was just kind of a large swath that was just dumped out. But yeah, this one looked like to be the original sound clip.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. More. There's more from more standing ovation from those in New York City at the Tony Awards. Yeah. The thing is, you have to stand up, because if the camera were to swing around and show you sitting there, it'd be like, oh, Trump supporter. Well, so everybody stands up like a bunch of sheep and applaud the fact that Trump.
It's interesting. Again, I don't know how the camera work is devised during a live show, but they were not scanning too many, you know, faces. They had like a long shot.
I don't think they were ready for it.
Yes. No, I know. I mean, I don't know. How it was planned, but it was odd. So I watched the Tonys. I love the Tonys. They're great show pieces and showcases. And this was about a half an hour from the end. So this is all the culmination. Robert De Niro, he's a big star.
Right.
He comes out, and it felt, even though I'm no fan of Donald Trump, it just felt like, really? You know, it felt inappropriate, even though I'm wondering if Robert De Niro is a New Yorker. Yeah. Donald Trump's a New Yorker. I wonder if he doesn't see him as the president of the United States as much as he just sees, hey, you know, it's like, it'd be like if you were suddenly president. I go, hey, screw you, John.
Oh,
like,
I see.
You're talking to the president. I'm wondering if that's why he felt so, because
But he's been saying this sort of stuff and tweeting a whole bunch of stuff about the president
in the last few years.
Yeah.
No, I know, but I mean, I wonder if he feels a little, you know, familiarity with him because he's a fellow New Yorker or something. Uh-huh. But anyway, it was odd. And it wasn't like an immediate standing ovation. People were kind of like shocked. They kind of started laughing. And then some people started, standing up, and then others stood up. But it was just an odd moment for Robert De Niro, I thought.
Even the New York Times and the Washington Post have articles. Liberals unsure as to why he did it and don't feel necessarily comfortable with him doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, old guy like that decides, hey, get up there in front of a live audience and take a shot at the president. It's easy. Good for him. Way to go, Bobby De Niro. By the way, has Bob De Niro ever done any stage work?
Yeah, I think he had something to do with this year's Broadway season. I don't know what it was.
Was he on stage? Has he been on Broadway?
I thought that. I'd have to go back and look. There was a reason why he was. Maybe it was just that he was brought back to introduce Springsteen, but I thought they introduced him as having something to do with the.
Was there any other political stuff that happened during the Tony Awards?
No, not
the kids in Parkland department. They got up and sang.
That was really impressive lighting. They had all the from the theater department at Parkland, and they sang that
from Rent.
Yeah, from Rent. It was very effective, I thought, because it was just like, what is a life worth kind of thing. That was a high point.
I'll give a quick shout out to the Fifth Avenue Theater. Not only they have a production of Hunchback, but they also have they honor high school actors and actresses, directors and musicals with award ceremonies every single year. And I think they've been doing it now for like 18 years or something like that. It's really remarkable that they do that, because most of the kids in the theater department are made fun of and they don't get any of the, you know, are you guys going to come to Carousel? Going to that stupid show. But at the Fifth Avenue Theater, they come out, they perform, and they get awards. And it really is nice.
Yeah, my daughter was in the production that Roosevelt did of White Christmas. And they recreate an entire scene, a lot like the Tonys.
Yeah.
At the award show and stuff, and it's really impressive. And you have a packed house in the Fifth Avenue Theater cheering on these high school kids. It's amazing how talented they are.
It is fun. Andy. All right. By the way, rich kids are rich kids are hanging on and waiting for their inheritance to pay for their retirement. They're looking ahead, thinking, Mom and Dad, when my Aunt Mary, who smoked and smoked like a chimney and drank like a fish, Tom. I used to give her every year at Christmas, I would give her a bottle of Old Grandad and a carton of Kent's. And my mom says, "You're playing her like a slot machine." I said, "Mom, terrible. What does she drink?" She said, "Old Grandad." I said, "What does she smoke?" Kent 100s. I said, "Then there you go. Merry Christmas."
You could have given her a patch, a smoking cessation pamphlet.
Well, how would that have benefited me, exactly. I ask you? I got bills to pay.
You're terrible.
I got bills to pay.
Yeah, well,
she loved them. Smoked them.
Oh, I bet she did.
Oh, she did, Tom.
But what did you, how much did you inherit from her?
$435,000.
Jeez. That's so terrible. You are awful. We need to tax that more.
Oh, they tax the crap out of it in Pennsylvania. But hold on, though. That's the gross. If you were to net out what I spent on Old Grandad.
5 cents.
Hold on. You net out what I spent on cigarettes and Old Grandad.
I
mean, that's the gross. The net. You can run the numbers. You run the numbers, Tom.
Well, anyway, a lot of rich kids.
What do you mean, well, anyway? Nice transition.
I'm just trying to say that. We're not talking about just one rich kid to my left here. We're talking about rich kids that are Generation Z.
Yeah.
And they're taking – and so you're just barely
baby boomer,
a baby boomer.
60, okay. 62, but I don't look
62.
It.
Okay. So this knock on Generation Z kids, mm-hmm. are – you know, you can't make that any more than you can against baby boomers because you're a perfect example of that. But anyway, they talk about how they are – how are they planning for retirement? They're planning on an inheritance to get them through retirement. And, you know, this is like the worst example of brazen entitlement you can imagine. However, these are between the ages of 18 and 22, these people right now.
Mm-hmm.
They say, however, there are some interesting things about this particular generation. It first off might be a sign of their own desperation because they realize that maybe their future is more in question than maybe their parents or their grandparents. Generation, and so they see inheritance as kind of a safety net. And why would they see it as a safety net? Because they have all sorts of other advantages like education and savings and job prospects. But the idea is that they now live, because they're used to living in a shared economy,
mm-hmm.
the idea of Airbnb and Uber and crowdfunding has changed their idea of how they're going to get through.
This is nuts.
Yeah, I know, but this idea is that, so maybe I won't get all of the inheritance from my parents, but, you know, maybe my grandparents, and how about my friends?
Mm-hmm.
They say, how many times do you crowdfund something? Hey, listen, everybody, I want to make this movie. I'm going to need, you know, 50 grand, and people sort of pitch in. That a lot of them think, 17% of them, as opposed to 4% of the rest of us, 70% of Generation Z people think that their friends are going to be gladly pitch in to make their retirement life better off. The same kind of percentages. Also, 14% of Generation Z members say extended family will shell out some cash.
Ugh.
As opposed to 5%. So the idea is that it's about triple the amount of money they think they'll get from other people. It's about triple what the rest of us mm-hmm. think we're going to get.
I see.
So
good plan.
Anyway.
Social Security by 2030 at its present state will be insolvent.
Well, in fact, that's one of the things they say, that they realize that they're not going to have those kinds of safety nets that everybody, you know, thought they were going to have. They don't have that, so they're relying on their inheritance to get them by.
Terrible. That is awful. That is
How do you
weak.
Feel? Well, okay, so John, you're well off, and you have two, three kids.
Yeah.
How much inheritance do you want them to?
I worked on that on Friday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I worked on a trust on Friday with Rick Gregorick.
Okay. That doesn't mean anything to me, but
it
still.
It will, because he's going to start sponsoring the show.
Oh, he is. Okay. But the idea is, how do you feel? Because you're always, you know,
40
you
years
kids.
Old. I said the money goes into an account, and they don't get it till they're 40.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So they have to,
make something of themselves. And they also have to, in order to get it, they have to have had a job for 10 years, and they have to be making X amount of dollars in order to get the 40K, in order to get at 40 years old.
10 years, not the same job.
Not the same job.
Oh, but
some
just
job. You can't
okay.
be laying about.
Okay. So, and if they are, then you're going to refuse them the money?
Yeah.
Does it go to the other state?
It goes to
too?
A charity.
It goes to a charity.
Yeah.
Well,
we
got to
take a break.
The...
We'll come back. I'll tell you during the commercial
that's
break.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And plus, I'm going to compromise between being cremated and being buried. I'm going to cremate the bottom half of my body. Just the bottom half.
You'll bury your head?
Yes.
That seems backwards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Tom McCurley Show right here on Cairo Radio. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and writing in as well. You can write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. One of you gets a chance to have the final word of the show. That is the letter of the day. No Nickname Beth writing in, Tom, during the commercial break. Haven't heard from No Nickname Beth in a long time.
That's right. It's a great little note, too. Oh,
good, good. All right, here we go. Make sure not to talk any Arabic. That's what one American Muslim will probably say to another if you happen to have a gun or go to apply for a gun. A piece in the New York Times with audio and video included, talking about the growing number of American Muslims that are purchasing sidearms.
So there are only 1% of Americans are Muslim, but there is a growing number of Muslims who are getting guns, and they talk about the clash with the gun culture that they are used to. Now, a lot of them, some of them are, you know, have been in the military. They are police officers. They're quite familiar with guns.
Mm-hmm.
But even they feel like they, when they go to like a gun range and all, that they are looked at somewhat suspiciously.
Uh-huh.
Because of the kind of the stereotype, mm-hmm, of the Muslim terrorist, for,
yeah,
instance.
Yeah.
And so there's a little there's a kind of a disconnect. They say the gun culture in America tends to be older white males,
mm-hmm,
and when they come in contact with, say, younger Muslim men and women, there's a little kind of a discomfort, at least according to the Muslims who are now buying more guns for their own protection, mm-hmm, or for their own practice. And there have been well-publicized instances where certain gun ranges have put this up. This is a Muslim-free zone.
Oh.
People have complained, are trying to take them to court. This is discrimination. They, mm-hmm, say we can do what we want.
Right.
No Muslims are here. And there's a whole profile on the varying different kinds of American Muslims now packing.
Like Hassan Sabi, who told the New York Times he became a gun owner because of?
As Trump was rising to power, and we saw the dramatic increase in Muslims being targeted, I said, you know what? Yeah, I don't ever want to become a victim. And God forbid, if I'm targeted or my family's targeted, I want to have the ability to at least have a fighting chance to defend myself. And I became a handgun owner reluctantly.
Okay. Didn't want to, but did. Shami Muhammad. So she started getting harassed for her Habib. And she decided she would get herself a gun, Tom. She says,
and then I didn't always wear my hijab. So I started wearing a hijab 8 years ago. So I did not honestly know how much women that wear the hijab have, like, so much hate put towards them and are treated so differently. So it really opened my eyes, and it gave me an experience I will never forget.
Mm-hmm. Wonder why she started wearing it.
Maybe in a kind of a solidarity with the Muslims that were being picked on in this country?
Possibly. Don't be afraid to own a gun.
The biggest internal issue that the Muslims have is they have a victim mentality or immigrant mentality when it comes to gun ownership. They believe that for some reason they don't understand, or they are very scared that they don't embrace that right, their Second Amendment right. Why? Because they are afraid that they're going to be put on some sort of list.
Oh, how about that? And then Ashir Abdid Jali says he thinks that the NRA needs to do a better job representing Muslim members. All right. Now that would be interesting.
Yes. For me, being a African-American and a Muslim, it's a bit more difficult. And I don't think the NRA kind of gives the same representation across the board. For Muslims who carry weapons and that may be members of the NRA, we don't get the same representation.
Tell you what we'd do. I mean, it's a terrible situation, but let's say you had a guy who's a Muslim, happened to have a gun. He goes into a deli or something, Tom, and somebody goes in there to rob the guy, and the guy doing the robbing's got a gun. The Muslim comes up, bang, shoots and kills the guy. He'd be a hero, instantaneous hero. And then you're like, oh, all right. Muslims with guns, that's okay with me. But as it is right now, it still becomes the prejudice that exists for you see a Muslim in America, a guy or a woman that you can identify physically as a Muslim, and immediately you have all of this, like, innate bias that comes forward because of the stuff we have seen. Most people didn't even look twice at a Muslim before 2001, right? You didn't think anything about it. You'd be on a plane with a guy who's a Muslim. You never thought, well, the guy's going to blow the plane up. Mm-hmm. Now we're acutely aware because it is built into our system, into our brain. In order to survive, you look for threats, and we have learned by watching enough television or if you look on social media that a Muslim or a guy that looks like a Muslim could be a problem. So that's why you respond that way.
Yeah, maybe so, especially for the people that like to carry around guns. Again, we're all dealing with stereotypes here, but apparently if you're an older white male, they would be maybe the most suspicious of Muslims in terms of their own politics. That's the impression that you're getting from this this article. There are only 1% of Muslims in this country, but I think that the general populace looks at a Muslim as being a threat rather than as being a neighbor, unless you have neighbors or you're comfortable with, plenty, with Muslims.
Yeah. I looked up to New York City has the most amount of hate crimes. Muslim hate crime went from 31 to 36. That's a 16% increase. So if you look at the percentage as well, it's going up. So most people that get harassed either through violence or intimidation in some other way, it's the Jews. They still lead the pack almost by three times what the Muslims get.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. So it goes Jews first, then gay, and then down the bottom or near the middle as a Muslim.
Now, I wonder if that's percentage. If there's only 1%, there's a higher percent of Jews and gays in this country than a Muslim. But still. Yep.
Do you have any problem with Muslims with guns?
Absolutely not.
You have any problem with middle-aged men, white men with guns?
No, I mean, I think we have too many guns in this country, and if we had fewer guns, I think we'd be better off. Uh-huh. But I certainly think that if everybody else has guns, there's certainly no reason not to let Muslims have guns. If they're Americans, if they're they're all on the up and up.
So who would you? So if there's too many guns, who would you take the guns away from first?
I think multiple. I would take it away from multiple gun owners.
Oh, okay.
How's that?
Oh, guys got too many guns?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What they say is, John, I think you were the one who first pointed this out to me. There are people that buy guns to buy guns.
I understand that.
The number of people that have guns isn't growing as quickly as the number of guns being bought and sold.
Right, and they don't have the record on that. They have number of guns being sold, but somebody can own up to 7 guns, 8 guns, 10 guns.
Yes.
But you would say, you don't need 10. I'll take those 8 away and leave you with these 2. Because you can only fire one gun at a time, really, unless you're Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? Was it Stallone who was running into a crowd of people with 2 machine guns going at the same time?
Yeah. Sounds like Rambo to me.
All right, but come back. We'll talk about the stampede of meatless products coming to a grocery store near you. And don't fear anybody. The stuff tastes great.
Amazing.
Yes, amazing.
A new sponsor?
Here we go. Right to us. MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. I want to thank Mr. Jim Zorn yesterday. We're on Saturday night, Tom. He stood up on stage with me at Safeco Field for Medical Teams International. We had 4 footballs, and the rule was throw the football. The person has to pay $1,000 to get Jim Zorn to throw the ball at you.
Uh-huh.
If you drop it, it's an additional $2,000.
Wait a minute. Who benefits from the
Medical Teams International. So you pay $1,000 to get Jim Zorn to throw the ball to you.
Yeah. And if you drop it, it's not Jim Zorn's fault.
No, it is wrong. No.
Tom. He throws it to
beautiful
him.
Beautiful passes. Oh,
okay.
Beautiful passes.
That's fair.
Fair, right?
Yeah, for 2,000, he throws it over to the other guy.
No.
Okay.
To show you how competitive Russell Wilson was, a couple years ago we did this with him.
Yeah.
He turns to me, throws the first one.
Yeah.
And the guy catches it, next one.
Yeah.
So he turns to me and goes, What do they pay if they drop it? I said, it's an additional $2,000. He goes, okay. Hey, right here. Just quick, short, little slant move. Guy runs a slam.
And he throws it
like a frozen rope. Ball hits the guy in the hand, bounces off his sternum, goes in the air, and his wife dives across the table and catches it. Anything not to get the 2,000. Nice to have Zorn there. Boy, what a nice guy he is.
Yeah,
I wish I had known him and cheered on for him when I was in Philadelphia because, I hated him. let's see. The fact that they are coming and they are incredibly, impossibly wonderful burgers, Tom. And the nice thing is you can enjoy them for a very, very long time because they're not going to clog your heart. The Impossible Burger that was created that is basically taste looks like real meat.
When you're cooking a piece of meat,
what
happens is the protein that's carrying the heme, myoglobin, muscle, opens up, the heme comes out,
and catalyzes a bunch of reactions.
Okay, I'm lost. I have no idea what he's talking about. But there's 17 more seconds to try to catch up.
Create the volatile compounds that really give that smell, that flavor that makes meat so compelling. And the more efficient approach that we came up with was to engineer a yeast and have that produce very high quantities of that heme.
Okay, so it's basically just trying to get the smell and the flavor and the taste of a meatless burger. And I had one of these at Fat Burger.
Yeah, and
my son kept making fun of me the whole time, so I couldn't really enjoy it. I was too busy trying to defend my choice.
Yeah.
But I did like it. It tastes like regular meat.
So how do they advertise themselves? I mean, how did you
Not well.
No.
No, I mean, look what, up on the screen.
Yeah,
I'm like, I said, I'll try a...
What do they call it?
Try an impossible burger.
Oh, okay. Did you not know what you were getting into?
No. Well, Ryan made fun of me. He goes, Dad, you know what that is? I go, no, what is it? He goes, it's a meatless burger. And he's like looking down on it. I'm like, I'll try that. Why not?
But the fact that you thought it tasted great is surprising. So I have one brother who's a vegetarian. And so I feel so sorry for Steve all the time because those vegan burgers are the worst. You know, he barbecue and he puts those crummy little patties up. And then the Wall Street Journal has this whole article about better meat patties.
Yes.
And they are gaining in popularity. Now, we're still talking about a small, it's just like 1% of meat sales are these non-meat meats,
right?
But they are moving into and taking over freezer space right next to real meat. And so right now the success of those, because they are increasing in popularity like by like 23% each year, they're increasing, even though keep in mind it's only 1% of the meat purchasing, that you now have the meat association, I don't know, it's the cattle ranchers or whatever, are now trying to keep those kind of offerings outside of the realm of the meat department.
Right.
They don't want them to, they want to claim a kind of propriety over the word meat, so you shouldn't be able to use it, even though the brand is called Better Meat. And they say it's similar to what's happening in dairy. A lot of the dairy industry is objecting to things being called milk that aren't actually coming from
cows. Right. So what do they want it to be called if it wasn't milk, if it was coming from a nut? What'd they say?
They don't. Well, I haven't heard this. You said this, and I'm not going to venture forth. But what they want it in the frozen food section,
right,
for instance, not competing with meat.
Right. Nut juice, they call it. That's what they'd rather have. You don't call it almond milk.
I see. Well, you happy you got that in there, Joe? Joe? John?
Joe. Yes, I am, Gary.